Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we're continuing our day-by-day watch of What If with What If Hela Found the Ten Rings. All that right after this. Man, only two episodes left after this, I think. That's crazy. I want it to continue forever. Can they just keep dropping this forever? All that right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I'm J. Scotty St. Clair.
What's up, J. Scoots?
Oh, you know, the end is nigh. The end is nigh for season two of episode, or for season two of What If, as well as for 2023.
Yeah. I was just talking to my niece about it after we watched this episode and just like how much fun it's been to just have one more episode each day. Like they helmed it as like you get 9 Christmas presents this holiday season, and it totally has been that for me. I've really, really enjoyed just like each day getting one more. And they're such bite-sized thing. It's not like if they were dropping 45-minute episodes, that probably wouldn't be as fun. It wouldn't be at least as easy to consume. But 20 minutes is just the right amount of time. I could just sit down during breakfast and watch it like every morning, you know?
Yeah, I'm really starting to see the appeal of Hanukkah.
Indeed. Present a day is not bad.
Not at all.
What'd you think of this episode, Hela? Get a good. All these episodes seem feel like there's fusions of two main parts of the story, and this is, you know, well, it's the character from Ragnarok, Hela, but basically going through the Thor storyline, but landing in, you know, Shang-Chi land. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I thought this was a really solid episode. It did kind of have the unfortunate timing and placement of being sandwiched between two of my absolute favorite episodes of What If and kind of like top tier episodes of What If. And I think had it debuted a little earlier in the season, I would have been saying like, this is one of my favorite episodes of What If, but still a really solid and really enjoyable episode. To your point, you know, I think it does a lot of things right, including revisiting some aspects of the MCU that are kind of begging for it. Like Hela, I think, is one of those characters and villains that people kind of forget about when they talk about, you know, potential characters to return. Like, we never saw a body, and for my purposes, the full might of Surtur and Ragnarok is not quite enough to take out Hela based on what we've seen from her. And then the other side of it is revisiting the world of Shang-Chi. While we didn't get to spend time with Shang-Chi forthright, just revisiting that world was awesome. So yeah, narratively, it did feel like it was kind of a rehash of the Thor storyline, but where it succeeded was revisiting these parts that really needed to be revisited.
Oh yeah. I'm starting to feel like one of the things they do to create these What If stories is just draw from a hat, like characters, storylines, and like setting, and they come from different movies and they just try to make those things work. You know, this is like Hela combined with the Thor storyline combined with the setting from Shang-Chi. So it's like, similarly to Peggy Carter, Winter Soldier, Black Widow as the Red Room, you know, as her story, as her setting. Like, and I do think that makes this one less surprising and kind of a narrative we're used to. So I agree with that, but I still really, really enjoyed it. And she was just so snarky and fun.
Oh yeah. Cate Blanchett was like the highlight of this episode.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And so snarky that it was almost like, it really like kind of poking fun at the world. And that was, it was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed her. And, and they've done a good job in almost every one of these episodes, having a moment of real, pathos, I guess. And in this one, it was her basically us as the audience watching her have the smallest dose of therapy. And getting to like realize what she actually wants out of life. You know what I mean? Zhai says, you know, you want to get the 10 rings for what? And then she's like, mm-hmm. I want to take them and kill my father for what? I want to rule the kingdoms for what? And she just keeps asking her for what? And then she has that flashback of realizing that her father had put her in this like system of control her whole life. And just like she was trained, just like the dog was trained to serve him and fight for him. And even after that, she says, that's the difference between me and you. I am nothing without a fight. And then she goes on to fight her way across the cosmos, which was so cool. Her going and saving Gamora and Gamora's people. That was really, really rad. Anyway, I just thought that was a really cool moment. And it was a real moment of pathos for her realizing, like, freedom. I just want freedom. I don't really want, like, all the other stuff I want. And it's true in life. Like, all the stuff that you think you want, whatever that is, whatever your goal is, a lot of times there's a goal under that goal that's the real thing you're looking for. And, you know, you don't have to be whatever, the head writer on a TV show or a rock star or whatever your big goal in life. Only a few people reach those big goals, but a person is truly happy. It just takes figuring out what you really want, what's the core of that desire that you have. And I mean, I myself have been like reassessing like over the last couple of years, like, what do I want? For a long time, it was just, I want to be a rock musician. You know, I want to like play music this way. And that's shifting slowly, as I've talked about on the podcast a little bit in the past. And it's just like, what is the core of that desire? Because I still feel it, but like, what is the core of it? And what is the world I'm trying to build for myself? And I think that was just a really good moment in this episode.
Yeah, that moment stood out to me as well for being particularly effective, and for a number of reasons, you know, all of which you brought up. It really was like the defining character moment, but it also served as like a stark reminder of how terrible a father Odin is. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we kind of gloss over that a lot, and I know in like Norse mythology, it's visited a little bit more. Like, he is a very kind of nuanced and not always a good guy or a savory guy, but yeah, Odin's a terrible father. So to kind of have, you know, the mirror of Winwoo and get to see a different side of Winwoo. I thought that was a nice parallel, although, you know, the characterization of Winwoo I might have some questions about. But yeah, everything else you brought up, like getting to see Fenrir, the wolf in that moment, I just beforehand was like just thinking about like, where is her wolf in this big picture? Like, that was her companion. So I'm glad they did that as well. And you mentioning the final scene there where she comes riding in with Winwoo to liberate Gamora's people reminded me of a fun fact. This episode was also going to be alternatively titled, What If Hela Became a White Savior?
funny. yeah, definitely like Hela the White is a cool thing in this world. Very, very Gandalf of her. You brought up the characterization of Winwoo, and I'd love for you to expand on that. Like, I think what you're saying, to put words in your mouth, is before Winwoo meets Shang-Chi's mother, he's supposed to be like a conquering like guy who is sort of bad, and then he meets her and changes his ways for the span of her lifetime. And that is, well, it's an open question, because there's a lot of parallels in this episode that are questionable. Like, he says, I don't rule over them, I protect them.
Right.
And then when Odin shows up, it's clear that Hela does not think he's there to really do any good. He's there to take the power, the 10 rings, because Hela sees behind his motivations, because she knows him so well. And she says, like, you're just here for the rings. And he says, no, I'm here to take them under my protection. It's the same line that Winwoo had. So there's this question of, like, even in that last scene when she's in white savior mode going through the galaxy, is what her and Winwoo are doing, is it really for the protection of the world? Sure, they may be taking out other threats, or is it just a part of that same conquering that Odin was doing? And, you know, speaking of the last episode in colonialism and like you know, like this,
sure,
is
sure.
this just intergalactic colonialism on a grand scale through the cosmos, or is she trying to do good? And it's kind of not really clear because of that characterization of Wenwu from Shang-Chi, and because we know the characterization of Odin. And like here, they treat it differently. It's treated right. like it's different, but I don't know that it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you picked up on the use of the word protection there, because that's not something that particularly stood out to me, but I think you're onto something there. And Wenwu's story is so long lived, and we've only seen such a small snippet of it. Like, it's entirely possible that somewhere along his course of his, you know, conquest, he was a little bit more altruistic. But what we mm-hmm. saw in the movie is, yeah, he was this conquering guy that kind of grew tired of the battle. And it was only when he was confronted with something new and challenging that he decided to change his ways and become a family man. So him not having experienced any of that, I believe that, you know, having found the Ten Rings and knowing that they came from another world, like instinctively knowing that Hela is the same way, I can understand why he would be so immediately interested in her, and maybe that changes the whole course of his life, sure. But, thinking about what Hela's, you know, conquest kind of looks like, I do believe her when she says, like, she wants to free the Nine Realms, because that's the only reason she takes the throne. I think about her parallels with Thor. Thor doesn't take the throne at the end of Thor. Even though he's worthy, he chooses not to take the throne. And the only reason she does take the throne is to undo his Odin's uniting of the Nine Realms. So, you know, maybe they diverge somewhere down the line. Maybe they have a romance for some time, and maybe they become embittered lovers. But yeah.
It's a lot of interesting questions in that that we really can't answer, because Odin seems like a benevolent king in the way that we get to know him through Thor 1, 2, and 3, and although when Hela shows up, she's trying to show, like, no, he's not. You know what I mean? It's right. like, yeah, he gets to write the history that he's a benevolent king, but no, he's a villain.
Right.
And so, yeah, it just makes me wonder if he's in, if they're in, like, it's also possible, you mentioned Wenwu. This is just, sorry, there's a lot of characters here, and all of them have this sort of shift between, like, benevolence and conquering hero, and what does that mean? And it ties into Loki too. When she yelled freedom and jumped up and said freedom, I was like, she just did the entire Loki arc in 19 minutes or whatever.
Yeah,
because she started even out that, as the conqueror. That
scene we were talking about previously, where she has the flashback to Fenrir, like when Jai is asking her what she wants, like. Sylvie basically had that same exact moment with, like, Loki. It's like,
yes,
you say you want to protect your friends, but what is the real reason? No, you don't want to be alone. And yeah, mm-hmm. Hela needs to find out who she is away from the fight.
And little girl Hela having that sort of realization as a child that she is the dog being controlled reminded me so much of Sylvie as a child in Asgard being picked up by the TVA. There's just, like, so many interesting connections with this. But one thing I was thinking, like, you mentioned Wenwu, and he was kind of an old, I don't have the best memory of Shang-Chi off the top of my head, but at least the intro, but is Wenwu, was he always sort of like the uncaring, conquering guy, or was there a time before that? You mentioned he was old and tired, and I'm wondering if maybe this even predates him being sort of old and tired. This might be when he still believes in his own hype, and he's still trying to protect the people.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's what I was kind of going for. And within the context of the film Shang-Chi, we really don't know, because the opening shot is, you know, him in ancient times, but it is him attacking a fortress. He's not defending a fortress. He is on the attack, and he is the conquering warlord there. But we really don't get any dialogue to extrapolate therefrom. The next time we really see him is when he meets Shang-Chi's mother. And we know Shang-Chi was born in the early 90s, so that had to be relatively modern times.
Yeah. Are you mentioning Shang-Chi's mother and the change of heart he had? When I thought it was really interesting, and I feel like we have had Odin say something to this effect in a monologue at some point, I'm not sure, but it led me to believe that because Frigga was his new girlfriend,
is
right when he's making the change to be like telling Hela he's no longer going to be a conqueror, we're stopping at 9, that sort of thing. I get the sense that Frigga was just like Shang-Chi's mother was for Wenwu. Like, Frigga came into his life and like made it that change in Odin. And I feel like Odin said something to that effect at some point in the movies, but I may be misremembering that.
Yeah, I don't recall Odin saying anything quite to that effect, but I definitely remember Hela's line in this episode about the new girlfriend, and that was just great because, yeah, speaking to her snarkiness, another line that came to mind for me is when she first meets Wenwu and she says, you know, I have respect for a man that's brave enough to try jewelry.
Yes, I love that line. You're not the first ass I've followed into battle. I really like that line.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Morris?
Yeah.
Or maybe Morris's ancestor, I don't know.
Yeah, it's unclear. I'm assuming Morris, like a being with no way to intake food just feels like a magical being that lasts forever or something, kind of like the Protector or whatever, which was cool to see the Great Protector just up there, like, defending. Ah, so much fun. And we talked about it a lot on the last episode. I love how we keep talking about things and then they answer them sort of in the next episode in a completely different setting. But we talked about the realms and what they mean and how they're related to all of this. And they say in this, and I think they said something similar in the Shang-Chi movie, that we know that they're not in the Nine Realms because Heimdall can't see them.
Right.
I'm kind of assuming that means they're not on the earthly plane of existence, because they say they're in between that and the underworld, which Hela is somehow an agent of because she's the goddess of death.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Very cool.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun to discuss and, like you said, kind of like pose these questions and get some answers, because, yeah, that line definitely stuck out to me as well. She said we're a border for the Earth, meant to protect from threats from the underworld, which, you know, reminded me a lot of Doctor Strange as well and what they do at Kamar-Taj.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely thought of of the Ancient One and her descriptions of what the Sorcerer Supreme does. Mm-hmm. Is defending Earth from those threats, and it seems like that's what this Talo does as well, but it's like specific to that location. I know they have that. I don't know if it's specific to that location or they can somehow intercept threats from the underworld. Do underworld threats have to go through them? Are they like a bridge between the underworld and Midgard or whatever?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm just going to, I mean, it's a lot of fun to discuss and speculate, but right now I'm just going to write it off all as pocket dimensions.
Yeah. Gotta love a pocket dimension.
Yes, sir.
Man, it was cool seeing Odin fight.
Oh, yeah.
We've never really seen him just like straight up go all out and fight, and it was just fun to see.
Yeah. I love the use of the Ten Rings to like play keep away, like watching them kind of like wrap around his spear, which I can't remember the name of the spear, but I like that moment too, where she's like, keep him away from that. What is that?
Yeah. Separate him from that sword or that spear.
Like Jorgund or something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. I also really liked the Ten Rings directly to the face.
Yes.
Just man. Like no one else could survive that, but you know, Odin is probably one of the few beings that can.
Right. For my Super Smash Brothers fans, Falcon Punch.
I think we assume this, but did we ever have it confirmed in Shang-Chi that the Ten Rings are from another realm? Or from outside the Earth, I guess. They said from outside the Earth, which they both kind of confirmed in this episode.
Within the movie, I don't think so.
I don't think so either, because I know we've been talking about it for 4 years now or whatever,
right?
Because that last scene, they're like, what are the Ten Rings? Is some kind of ancient power? They've set off some kind of beacon, like all this stuff. So this is actually giving us a clue that I don't think we've ever had before, which it's not like an ancient civilization on Earth. They are from somewhere outside of Earth. They weren't clear on whether it was outer space or another realm, but they have two lines in there that they say, like, Wenwu, when he sees Hela, knows this is something interesting because he knows that great powers come from beyond Earth.
Right.
And then Odin says something like the Ten Rings don't belong here. They don't. So both of those lead me to believe that they don't come from Earth.
Yeah. It's also kind of interesting to contemplate, like, Heimdall is, like, you know, all-seeing and supposedly keeping a watch on the Nine Realms, but he wasn't really aware of the Ten Rings until Hela came in contact with them. So, like, in my own headcanon, I just kind of assumed that, like, you know, Midgard is part of the Nine Realms, but Odin is kind of like a hands-off ruler. Like, if there's not an immediate threat that needs, like, Asgardian involvement, he's okay with it. So I just assumed he was aware of the Ten Rings, was just like, okay, they're off there doing their own thing. If it becomes a problem, we may intervene. But to just find out that they weren't even aware of them was kind of...
I didn't take it that way.
Uh-huh.
I took it the way you said before.
The first one? Okay.
Yeah, which, like, it's the first time he's mentioned it to Odin.
Sure.
Like, oh, hey, this may be a problem. But, like, that's exactly... To me, it's like he could have seen them. I also get the sense that Simon Heimdall sees everything, but does he see everything all at once? You know what I mean? Mm. Like, does he have to, like, put his gaze to something for it to be seen? Because he can see the entire Nine Realms, but I don't know. Maybe he does see it all at once, but... Or is he sort of scanning around... And now he had a reason to look there. And maybe he's seen the Ten Rings before, but, like, he's never had a reason to worry about them killing Odin's daughter or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to say, based on what we've seen so far, I think he's still, you know, God with a little g. So I'm going to say he can only, you know, zoom in on what he wants to see at that particular moment, what he chooses to focus on.
Not omniscient, but, like, the power to look anywhere.
Right. While we're talking about Heimdall, I do want to say I was pretty impressed that they brought back Idris Elba, because he's one of those actors that, like, it seemed like after, you know, he had done his time with Marvel in interviews and stuff like that, it felt like he didn't have a lot of kind things to say about his experience with Marvel, and I felt like he was kind of done with Marvel, and of course he went over to do things with, you know, DC and the Suicide Squad. But the fact that he's willing to come back, I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but I like that. I like the fact that they were able to bring talent like him back, even for, you know, so small a role. It obviously speaks to some goodwill there.
Yeah, for sure. And that is very, very cool. I always get the sense that Idris Elba is just so underutilized. He's such a great actor. And I feel like he got the role of Heimdall right before he broke through. And so, like, we all, like, I remember seeing the movie and being like, oh, wow, Idris Elba's in this. Like, he'd just kind of broken through with, like, Luther and such, and, like, everyone was starting to know his name, and then, like, but he's now, if they were going to cast him, like, a year later, they probably would have gone for something bigger, but, like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It just feels like they picked something for him a little too soon for the star he became. But it's one of the few guys who, like, the Marvel movies is not what made him famous. You know what I mean?
True.
Like, they picked someone that didn't have as big of a name, and then he got a big name by stuff other than the Marvel movies, and now we all know him. And they did try to expand his role in Ragnarok. They gave him a lot more to do in that.
True.
Very, very, very small corner of the universe, when I think he could have played almost anyone in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because he's so, so good.
Yeah, I'm actually just now recalling that he did pop up at the very end of Love and Thunder, so I guess that bridge had already kind of been mended a couple years back, at least.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, in the post-credit scene where Jane makes her way to Valhalla.
Oh, you're right.
Greets her.
You're right. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. I was like, wait, he's dead. And then he's like, right, because he was in Valhalla. I'd forgotten that, too, off the top of my head. Did not pop in. I'm like realizing lately, and part of it is the sort of like spreading out of the MCU in phase 4 and stuff, but like I am having a harder time remembering some of the key points. We're doing our rewatch right now, which is probably gonna be helpful, but like I'm like, sometimes I'm just like, wait, that happened? Oh, it did happen.
It was like when you brought up the other Thanos' lackey, and I kept correcting you as Ebony Maw. I felt like, when I listened back to that, I felt like, you know,
such a dumbass.
But
a
few years ago, I would have been able to like spit off like the other like that.
Yep,
but it's like you said, with so many movies and so much time removed, it's so much more to remember.
Yep. And I feel bad because I just watched those movies and I could not remember the other. And like, it's in the subtitles. I don't think it's ever said in the movie, but it's in the subtitles. They name.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
I really like the line, any of those threats from the underworld looking for a job? It's really good. Anyway, I think that's all I got. You got anything else on this episode?
The very last thing I have is Jeff was unable to join us, but he wanted to make sure that we mentioned this great homage that he had. So Winwoo had the line about not being her father. So he said, make sure you mention Winwoo was like, I'm not your father, but I'll be your daddy, which is, you know, a funny joke considering Yondu's line.
I was like, he didn't say that though, right? Like, I don't remember that. He's just talking about.
He
like,
says, "I'm not your father," and which stuck saying, out to me because it kind of felt like the reverse of Darth Vader, the way he delivered it. They were sitting across the table from each other, having a discussion about, you know, her father abandoning her and fearing her, the fight that he instilled in her, and he said, "I see the fight in you, but I'm not your father."
Yeah, and I see the fight in you, but I'm not afraid of it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I get it now. He's saying, I'm not your father, but I'm your daddy, as in he wanted to be with her.
Sorry for butchering your joke, Jeff.
No. I just didn't understand it. I was like, wait, he said that? I don't remember him saying daddy at any point. I got you. I get it now. I'm the one who butchered it. I ruined it.
Well, what am I apologizing for anyway? We know Jeff famously doesn't listen to podcasts.
Like, not a podcast, hardly ever. Not just ours, just a podcast. He's just not a podcast listener. Oh, man. All right. Well, Jay Scotty, thank you so much for joining me on another What If episode. Only two more left, and I am really, really bummed about it. That this train has to stop. But tell the people where they can find you online.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, so I appreciate you having me on. If you want to hear more of me talking about animated stuff, check out Animation Deliberation. That's the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. And also over on Multiverse News, where we just kind of, you know, brought 2023 to a crescendo with our top list for TV and film.
Yeah. That was a really fun episode, and we dropped it this morning as we're recording this. And we each gave our top five movies and our top five television shows for 2023, and it was fun. It was fun seeing what was on everybody's list, what crossovers. Some of our patrons sent in their own list. It was a lot of fun. So please, if you haven't yet, and you're a fan of this show, please check out Multiverse News. We're working on it every week and working really hard to put out a good show for you guys, bring you good information, and have a good time talking about it. So. We will be back very soon. Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Hey, you just listened to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast from Stranded Panda. I really hope you liked it. Let me just say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com/mcucast. You are the lifeblood of our little operation here, and a huge, huge thank you to our insanely generous Illuminati tier patrons, Walter Kreisky III, Lieutenant Bongo, and Jazz Viz. You guys are amazing. If you'd like to see our beautiful faces, you can catch a video version of many of our episodes at youtube.com/strandedpanda. Love you 3000, my friends.